Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Actually, thanks everyone for being here. And I'm glad that we had that questions and answer, because it actually puts me right into the presentation that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So medical alternatives to incarceration, health liaison to the court advocates for community health and health in all policies. What does this mean? Thank you, Ali. So in 1989, a first drug court established was in Miami, Florida. In 2004, New York City Health and Hospital creates medical discharge planning program. In 2005, the New York City Correctional Health Services creates the HIV continuum of care model. In 2007, HRSA suspends jail linkages, funds New York City Health HIV care community care. HIV continuum care model using the health liaison. In 2008, New York City Correctional Health and Drug Courts Representative established collaborations. In 2012, Drug Courts operates in every U.S. state and territory. And in 2015, HRSA suspends, seeks to replicate the HIV care continuum model using the health liaison. So New York City Diversion Courts. These are the courts that New York City has been working with. This is the treatment courts, detox treatment, attorney to prisons, attorney to incarceration, judicial diversion programs, and TASC.
We have a TASC representative.
Oh, great. So what does the health liaison do or provide? So the health liaison facilitates community alternatives to incarceration, ATI, medical information placement in lieu of continuing to incarceration, program placements such as substance abuse, compassionate release such as skilled nursing and hospice cares. The services that the health liaison provides, the service plans address individuals' health and social supports need, public safety. The information that the liaison will be providing will be a medical summary, lab, TV screening, psychological social history, patient review instruments such as a PRI for the hospice and skilled nursing homes, and of course, one of the most important part is the doctor from the letter. The care coordination will be with the defense attorney, the prosecutor, the jail health staff, community, and health providers.
So, Jackie, is that the summary? Is that just a list of things, or is it?
So the medical summary is just exactly what the problem list is of the client. The client does not need a whole chart in order to be placed in any substance abuse treatment program. They do need the PRI in order for them to be accepted to a nursing home. Other than that, that's the all they need is a review, patient's review. I can't see it. Okay, so this is my favorite slide, and I'm a little nervous, so I'm sorry. But this is my favorite slide. So this flow is gonna show you two different ways to do this court advocacy. Right? So the first, one of the ways that we do it is that the court affiliates, either Legal Aid or TASC or any one of the affiliates, contact us, the health liaison, in the jail system. And there, the health liaison looks at the records, at the health, electronic health records, to see the client's progress or what's happening with the client in the electronic health records. From there, the health liaison actually contacts the patient care coordinator inside of the facility so that the patient care coordinator could call down the client, bring the client down and do an assessment with the client, an intake with the client. So when we provide the information to the court advocates, we know exactly what we're providing and that everything once we give that information to the court, that the judge will make the proper decision on where to place the client when the client gets released. That's the ultimate goal, right? That the client, the last one where it says placement and then we verify that the client got to the program where it needs to be. The other side of this is the more difficult part. So here, we're contacting the courts, and we're asking, the health liaison is asking the courts to please work with us, because we have a client who needs not to be incarcerated, but to be out in the community. So this is where now the health liaison contacts the nurse to make sure that there's a PRI in place. We are calling Zach or Roz. Zach, say hello. The doctor's here. Asking them to please help us, give us a letter. We need to make sure that the judges are making the right decision for the client. Excuse me. So now, after all this is happening, the health liaison is actually looking for different programs to be sending this PRIs for all these nursing home or all these other programs that we know that they might be able to take them, to see if we could get someone to say, yes, I'm going to take your client, because as you know, a lot of these nursing homes will not take the clients if they're coming out of jail or prisons. Thank you, Ali. So we served 793 clients from October 2014 to September 30th of 2015. And the court affiliates reached out to us. There were 65% of them reaching out to us. Parole revocation were 19%. And we initiated, correctional health initiated this process 16%. This is my favorite part. You went too fast with that. So out of 793, 80% of the client that we provided the services were released. Can anyone tell me? Oh, thank you. Can anyone tell me why the other 20%, that cloud, I have a cloud there. That's my favorite. Why is that cloud there? And why is it still 20% that we were not able to connect and to really get released?
What do y'all think?
Rejected by the judge.
Well, then rejected by the judge, so some folks didn't get released, right? They stayed in jail, went out to stay. So, what else do you think happened? Anybody?
Yeah.
Any guesses?
Maybe they died.
Somebody may have died, yeah.
Actually, could get a nursing home approval.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The program where we're trying to put the person in rejected them, yeah.
So, if you're going to help them, why?
Some other reasons why this program may reject them is that the person has medical issues that they can resolve, but their mental health issues are too much for the program to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have a very, very informed audience. So some folks remain incarcerated, some were not eligible for the program beyond this. Can I just, yeah?
Go ahead.
So this is pathetic, actually. So the courts very often want folks to be placed in a residential treatment program versus an outpatient one. Can you think of reasons why? Why would the courts prefer a residential? Yeah, I mean, I think it's really more about control, right? They feel like in the program can report, the courts will have, it's more, what would you say, controlled, right? They feel like they get more control. Very often the programs are contracted with the courts and they have to report on a regular basis. With outpatient treatment, there's more freedom, right? It's a little bit more risky for the courts, which is understandable. But then, as it turns out, through federal regulations, if you haven't participated in an outpatient substance use treatment program, you're not actually eligible to be placed in an inpatient one. So there's disconnects between the service availability and what the courts want, and then the other one, which is that the client declined the program option, is about making a risk assessment that the person is deciding to remain incarcerated in lieu of alternatives to incarceration because they fear the consequences of taking the program. And that sounds strange. Until you realize that if you take the time and do your 2-3 months with no parole, then you're free and there's no additional court involvement. But if you go into a 6-month treatment program and you violate the terms of your parole, which would be to use drugs and
we know relapse is part of recovery unless you're incarcerated, in which case that's not really allowed. So what you have is someone who's declining to take what actually would be maybe better for their health and well-being and long-term treatment options in favor of staying incarcerated because they fear that they won't stay clean. And if they don't stay clean while they're in a mandated program, they will not only finish the time they were facing, but that will get added on and they can be facing a long period of time. So this gets really complicated quickly. So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you, Ali. So the presenting issue. So, of course, we're not surprised, 76% substance abuse, non-HIV, 16% were HIV, and others were the 8%. These are the court's affiliates that we actually collaborate with, Legal Aid Society, Treatment Court, Treatment Accountability Safer Community, TASC, Bronx Defenders, Brooklyn Defenders, Neighborhood Defenders of Harlem, New York County Defender Services, Midtown Community Court, DTA, 18B attorneys, and private attorneys. So we're trying to work with anyone that will work with us who's in the courts, and we could just advocate for our sickest client inside the jails to come out and get help if they need, with whatever they need. Substance abuse, HIV, whatever it is, that they're not to be in jail to get this type of stuff.
So I just have one question, and so we just please thank her for all this work because she's really the pioneer on this. But when we started this, we had how many compassionate releases in the year before we started?
Two.
One, two.
One or two.
And now we had 21 last year.
Yes.
And the year before we started this, we didn't get calls from judges or DAs or any of that. And now they have us on speed that way. Right?
Yes.
4:45 on Friday is like hot work.
So, this is something that we could do. I mean, we want to do this work before they become incarcerated, right? So this is something that we should be doing outside in the community, actually advocating so like that we do not put people in jail that are sick. However, they're there now, so we have to do something to make sure that they get out, right? So when Mark says the community has to reach in inside, makes a lot of sense to me because I can see why we should be doing this. And this is, it's important to do this. I'm sorry, I'm very passionate with my work, so. Thank you.
Thank you.